to introduce the speakers. And Jared Tuberville, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before I give you what he wrote down for me. He's from Oklahoma. And how many of you are from Oklahoma? See, you're amongst friends. Me too. He asked me if I knew about Oklahoma, and it turns out my cousin lives in the same town he was born in, and many of my relatives are all around, so we're fairly familiar with that. Jason is married to Leanne for 3.5 years. They have a son, Logan, almost 2 years old. He studied Bible and ministry at Oklahoma Christian College, or Oklahoma Christian University now, excuse me. He's been the youth minister at Shawnee Trail Church of Christ in Frisco, Texas, for almost 6 years. And with that, I'll turn it over to him and let him tell you the rest.
All right, thank you. So while I'm getting set up, is it okay for me to move this? All right, I will. So while I'm getting set up, I'll tell you that I was told that I have about an hour to speak. So I'm going to try my best to fill that. I don't want to talk that long. I know you guys don't want to hear me for that long. But I want to thank you guys for having me here and having me here this morning. I'm very excited to be here to get to talk to all of you. I've had the privilege of meeting several of you already. And I know Leanne will echo this, but you guys have been very warm and very welcoming to us, and we feel at home here just from the interactions we've had with you so far. I look forward to getting to meet some more of you later on as we do lunch and some other things this afternoon, but I want to thank you so much for having us here this morning. One of the fun things about church interviews is you kind of interview with the entire church, right? If you go and interview at a job, you might talk to one or two people. At a church, it's however many they have. That's how many you're interviewing with. And so this morning, one of the things that I want to do is share my story a little bit and hopefully encourage you through that. One of the things about interviewing with 100 people is I get the same questions 100 times about who are you and where did you grow up and all that. So I'll just get it out of the way here, and you guys will know a little bit more about me. And we can talk about some other things later. But I've had a lot of experiences in my life, and one of the things I like to do is share those experiences with others. And so this morning, it'll be kind of a little mashup of this is who I am, and these are things that I've done, and this is how I've seen God work in my life. And hopefully through that, I can encourage you in the things in your life. So I was born in Oklahoma City, July 3rd, 1986, and it was a warm evening. No, I'm not going to go that slow. Again, that was the hour. That's the hour version. Oklahoma City is where I grew up. I lived there 25 years before moving to Frisco, so I do consider myself an Okie. I'm not a Texan, okay? So for you that have stigma against Texas and things like that, I'm not a Texan. I'm from Oklahoma, okay? My parents actually still live in the same house that I grew up in, so they've been there over 30 years. My family are church people. They're church folk. My parents both grew up going to church. My grandparents still go to church. And so from a very early age, I don't know when my first church service was, how old I was. I can guarantee you I wasn't very old, but I grew up going to church. And my family, my parents wanted to instill in me the importance of loving God, and part of that is going to church so you can hear about God. You can hear the preaching. You can go to classes and get teaching. You can build relationships that will help further your faith. And they knew how important that was, and they showed me how important that was. And they did the same thing for my two brothers and sister as well. I grew up playing sports. It might not look like it now, but I love playing sports, and I've played everything. I still try to play everything. Now it's just for a lot shorter amount of time, but I'm much better at watching sports now than I am playing them. But I love sports, and I've played everything. And so my friends and I, we would always be at somebody's house in somebody's front yard, or we'd meet at the park, or we'd go to the church, and we would just play sports. And that was a big part of my life. I put a lot more time and energy and effort into soccer. That was the sport that I played. I played for the school. I played for the club, travel team, however you want to categorize that. But that's what I played growing up. But even doing that, even playing soccer and playing for two, three teams at a time, my parents told me that you need to be at church. I didn't go to practices on Wednesdays. My coaches would try to put practice on Wednesday. We'd say, we're not going. We have church on Wednesday nights. He needs to be at youth group. I missed tournaments. I missed college showcases to go to mission trips, to go to church camp, because church was more important than sports. And I am so glad that my parents taught me that. Because unfortunately, a lot of parents don't do that with their kids, saying that church is important. But luckily, my parents did that, and they helped me grow my faith. Even with missing practices and missing tournaments and things, I was blessed enough, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm bragging, because later on you'll see it's not that good. But I was really good at soccer, and I was fortunate enough to have several colleges recruit me as I was graduating high school. And so high school is that time when you're trying to figure things out, right? You're trying to figure out, what do you want to do with your life? Where do you want to go with your life, and what are you going to be? And so you start putting together a plan, and you start to put that plan in motion. And I was no different. So for me in high school, I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do with my life? What do I want to do? And again, my parents keeping me at church and keeping me going to church, that meant I loved church. And so as I thought about it more and more, to me, working at a church and doing ministry was the only thing that I wanted to do. Now, I kind of had to convince my dad that that was actually something that would be a job and something where I wouldn't just starve to death, right? But once we got past that, I started putting into a plan to become a minister. And I loved my youth ministry. I loved my youth ministers. I still do. I talk to them to this day. As I got older in youth group, there weren't anybody else my age in the youth group. And so I started taking the younger kids under my wing, and I started encouraging them and trying to invest in them. And that made me think, man, I really love youth ministry. And so I had my plan. I wanted to go to school to be a youth minister. So when I started looking at the schools that wanted me to play soccer there, Oklahoma Christian was the one for me, for a few reasons. One, it wasn't very far from home. And two, I saw it as a place that if I was going to take soccer out of the equation, if something happened where I wasn't going to play soccer anymore, it was a place that I wanted to be. And it was a place that I could learn to be a minister and learn to be a man of God above all things. And so I chose to go to Oklahoma Christian. And so I had my plan. I was going to go to Oklahoma Christian, play soccer for 4 years. Then I was going to get a youth ministry job right after that. And then I was going to live happily ever after, right? And so it sounds like a great plan, and it was in theory. But it didn't quite work out that way, I'll tell you that. My freshman year, it did work pretty well. Things were going great my first year. Soccer, I was playing a lot. They gave me a lot of playing time. I was doing really well there. Academics were going really well. I was actually classified as a sophomore after my first semester because I had enough credits. And I had lots of friends, and things were going awesome. But then the second year rolled around. And during the summer, I was doing an internship for a youth group. And we were playing touch football. And you can probably see where I'm going. I injured myself, rolled my ankle really bad. It got to be this big, I'm not kidding, in a matter of minutes. So I had to go to the hospital, get x-rays. Luckily, there was no big damage done. But that put my soccer season on hold for a little while. And in actuality, it never even got started that second year. I played all of 5 minutes my second year, and it was really frustrating to me. I wanted to leave. I wanted to transfer somewhere else where I could actually play, I was getting very frustrated. But instead, I decided to stick it out. Again, my plan was, you know, if soccer didn't work out, at least I'm at a school I want to be in. So I stuck it out, and that end of the second season, we got a new coach. And I guess he really wanted to make his mark on the program and show that he was in charge, because during the off season, so this is off season, we had 3-a-day practices, 6 a.m. after lunch and then after school, we had practice. And That was a little much for me. I wasn't going to be a professional player, so I decided that was going to be the end of my career. I didn't like that. So, again, going back to my plan, I wanted to play for 4 years. Instead, I quit after two. So my plan wasn't really going the way I thought it was. And after I quit the team, other things started to fall apart too. My academics started to suffer. I became more and more closed off socially, because really, for the first time in my life, things weren't going my way. And again, I'm not bragging, because growing up, things came easy to me. I had everything that I wanted. It was just an easy life. I didn't have to work in high school or anything like that. And so I never had that time where things got tough. And now I was experiencing that really for the first time. And I wasn't handling it very well. And so my academics got worse. I became closed off more socially. And so all this led to me squeezing 4 years of college into 6 years, right? As they say. So it took me a little longer to finish. But towards the end of my time at OC, I started looking for jobs, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? You're getting ready to graduate college, and you need to find a job, because what are you going to do? So I sent out dozens of applications to churches all over the place, hoping to find that youth ministry job that I wanted. I had had great internships during my college years. I had some great names in my corner, people who knew churches all over, and people knew them. But I did a couple dozen, maybe, phone interviews, and I did about 10 in-person interviews, and was rejected every time. And that did not feel good. I didn't know if it was me. I didn't know if it was the fact that I was single at the time. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that my plan was falling apart, and that I wasn't doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing. The next thing I know, I was asking my youngest brother if he could put in a good word for me at the sandwich shop that he was working at, because I needed a job after graduation, no matter what it was. And so I was asking my youngest brother, hey, can you put in a good word and see if I can get a job at the sandwich shop? So I look at it now, and I think of Proverbs chapter 19, verse 21. I think I have it up here. Many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. I had a plan. I had a plan that I thought was a good plan. I thought it was a God-approved plan, right? I wanted to be a minister. God wouldn't want to say no to somebody to be a minister, right? I mean, that doesn't make sense. He wants everybody to be a minister. So to me, I was really confused that why is this not working out for me? But having the benefit of almost 10 years of hindsight now and looking back on this, I can see how much better God's plan was for me than the plan that I had for myself. And I'm so happy that his plan prevailed over mine. So the next phase of my life is what I like to call my wandering in the desert phase. You know, we talk about it biblically, right? This is my wandering in the desert phase. So my brother put in the good word, and I got a job at Jersey Mike's sub shop. And it was okay. I liked it good enough. It was a place I didn't mind going to, and you guys know jobs, sometimes that's a problem. But I didn't mind going there. It was actually a place where the food was good, and you know, if you worked in food, sometimes you're like, oh, you don't really want to eat there. But no, Jersey Mike's is good. So if you ever go to Jersey Mike's, it's a good place to eat. And the people were good enough around me, the coworkers. I went from the new guy to store manager in about a month. I leapfrogged everybody else that had worked there, and some of them were a little upset. But I was now running the shop, and I was running the kitchen. I was ordering all the food. I was even hiring new people. And so I was like, okay, maybe this is something that I'm supposed to do. And in fact, the owners were going to send me to New Jersey for training so I could become an even higher person in this company. And so I thought, okay, well, this isn't going too bad. But then the owners started calling me at like 10 o'clock at night, chewing me out, cussing me out, getting on to me for something that happened at 6 o'clock, when I had left and clocked out at 2 o'clock. I didn't know what in the world was going on, but this happened almost every day for a few weeks. And so, obviously, I didn't like that. So I started looking around at different things. Until one night, they called me It was the worst chewing out I ever had. And they wanted me to come in for some ridiculous reason to do some ridiculous task, which I did. I went in the next day, super early, to do this task they asked me to do, because I was like, well, I'm going to be a good worker. I did it, but at the end of the day, I was like, this is it. I'm done. So I quit that day. And luckily, like I said, I had some other things in the works, and I had already had kind of a job set up for at Feed the Children. I don't know if you've heard of Feed the Children or not, but what Feed the Children is a charity that works around the world, and you probably guessed it, with helping with food for people who have trouble getting food. So my job was to talk to our partner agencies, which are churches, food banks, food pantries, things like that, and I would tell them what we had available in our warehouses, and I would set up shipments, and they would come pick them up, and that was my job, to organize those things. My actual title was Distribution Center Consignment Coordinator. That sounds fancy, right? Sounds really good, but what it means is guy who sits in cubicle and emails and does phone calls all day. So really not as glamorous as it sounds. And again, I like the people there. I was working for one of my old youth ministers. He was my manager. Everybody else there was really nice and really good. And I liked the fact that I was actually a little closer to ministry than I was working at the sandwich shop, right? I was working for a charity, so it's a little closer to ministry. The problem is, again, I didn't want to work in a cubicle. I'm not a cubicle person. I can't just sit in a box all day looking at a screen. And the screen we had was, I mean, the program looked like it was made when computers first came out. It was the black screen. It was just like green letters, and you had to use the 10 key to get anything done. That was not what I want to do. I'd rather be the person out there handing out food and having conversations with people. And so I decided that the cubicle thing is not for me. I want to find the opposite of working in a cubicle. I tell you, I found the opposite of working in a cubicle. I went to Alaska and became a commercial salmon fisherman. So if you ever want the opposite of cubicle work, go to Alaska and get on a boat and do that. I have a lot of stories from Alaska. I could tell you those stories for days, and there's way too many to share today. So what I will share is that was a hard 3 months. That was a hard summer. Not only physically, which there was a lot of work and very long days, and so it was very physically demanding, but also mentally demanding. The people who worked there, that had been there before, they wanted to make it hard on you mentally. I don't know why. Maybe it's because people did that to them when they came in, so they felt like it was their job to pass it on to the newbies or whatever. But they made it hard mentally. And on top of all that, I was the only Christian there. I was the only Christian working for our little group, our company. And I didn't go to church for the entire 3 months. Now, that was because a couple of reasons. One, I don't think the nearest church was within 100 miles of where we were. So there was no option there. And also, even if there was a church nearby, I don't think they would have given me time off to go. So I ended up, that was the longest I had ever gone without going to church in the same amount of time, over 3 months not going to church. The strange thing is, I feel like my faith was strengthened during those months instead of weakened. In the small amounts of time off that we had, there wasn't much to do. There was take a shower and do laundry. There was go for a little walk or read. That was it. We didn't have TV, we didn't have internet, we didn't have anything else. So in the little bits of time off that we had, you had those three options, and I did those three. Luckily, I decided to take my Bible with me on the trip. That was one of the greatest decisions I've ever made, because I was able to get into God's Word and get encouragement from God in those very hard 3 months. And I really understood, and I was finally understanding for the first time, really, what Jesus meant when he told Satan in Matthew 4, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. I mean, without the word of God, I don't know if I would have made it through that time. It was really hard on me, physically, mentally, and emotionally. But luckily, I knew that God was there because I was in his word as much as I could. And it was that summer that I really made the best decision that I've ever made in my life. And that was, I truly decided to let God take control of my life. Now, when talking about best decisions that people make, people bring up their spouses, right? The best decision I ever made was to marry my spouse, and that's really good. It's way up there, Leanne. Don't worry about it. But I would have met my wife if I didn't allow God to take control of my life. And so this decision was better. And as church people, we tend to say the day that you get baptized is the best decision that you're ever going to make. It's the greatest decision you're ever making. I agree with that. But as a 12-year-old, I knew what it meant to have Jesus die for my sins a little bit. I knew who Jesus was. I knew what sin was, and it was bad, and I didn't want it. And Jesus died for me, so I didn't have to worry about these sins. And that's kind of what I understood. But what I didn't understand as a 12-year-old is what it meant to let Jesus be the Lord of my life. And really, how can you at that age? It's really hard. And so to me, it wasn't until the plans that I had that I thought were going to work, until all those plans went nowhere and I was left with nothing, that I realized, okay, maybe I need to take a step back and let Jesus take a step forward in my life. And it wasn't until I was in Alaska that I figured that out. Now, I know some people have to hit rock bottom to get to that point. And luckily, I never had to hit a rock bottom. You know, I've seen people get caught up in drugs and alcohol and so many different things to where they basically have nowhere else to go but up, and so they finally do realize, maybe I need to give this God guy a chance. Luckily, I never got to that point. But I did have to have a feeling of hopelessness a little bit to allow God to come in and take control of my life. And for me, that hopelessness was, I wasn't going anywhere. I had nothing in front of me. At the end of the summer in Alaska, I was going home, and I had nothing in front of me. I didn't know where I was going, didn't know what I was going to do. I was just here. And so I didn't know what to do. So I said, God, for all these years, I've been saying that I know better than you and I have a better plan than what you could provide for me. But I can see now that I was wrong. So I'm going to let you come in and take over for me. So after I got back from Alaska, I got a job working at Office Depot, working from 5 a.m. to 11 a.m., stocking shelves and working a little bit with customers. And again, that's not what I was wanting to do. That's not a part of my plan. But this time, I was okay with it because I was doing something, but I knew that God was going to watch after me and take care of me. So after working there for several months, I actually saw on Facebook my old youth minister and somebody I'd worked with before. He said, I'm looking for an intern for the summer. So I texted him and kind of half-jokingly said, hey, I'm available. And he sent back, you're hired. Okay, well, that's easy. And I kind of felt like I was hitting the reset button in a lot of ways because I was going back to where I was coming right out of high school and being a youth ministry intern all over again at 25. So I was going to be an intern older than a lot of the youth ministers out there. So it was like hitting the reset button. But again, I was going to trust God. And that summer, I ended up with not one but two full-time positions extended to me to work in youth ministry. And so I decided to move to Frisco, Texas. And looking back on things now, I can see God's fingerprints in every step of the way. And I laugh about it now because it's so obvious now when I look back on it. But at the time, I was struggling. I was hurting. I didn't like it at all. And I ended up at a church that I needed to be at the time. And at a place where I could make my mark in ministry and that I could grow and learn. And it's a place that I fit in really well. And it has worked out so good for me and I love it. But when I think back on my plan, if it had gone the way that I wanted it to, I would have been 4 years in college and then right into youth ministry at the age 21, I think I would have been a disaster. I truly believe that I would have been a disaster because, like I said, things came easy to me in a lot of ways. That led to me being pretty confident in myself and in a lot of ways pretty cocky. And so I think that, one, I probably would have been burnt out myself as soon as that first hard thing came up. If it came up after college like it did during college to me, I don't know what I would have done. I would have been stuck in this very difficult situation. Or maybe the church would have been burnt out on me pretty quick because I would have just been doing my own thing and thinking I was the best thing ever. And I was a lot like Israel, who had just gotten out of Egypt, right? They could see God, and they knew God was there, but they said, I know you're here, but I have a much better idea of what we should be doing than you. God told them, this is what you need to do, this is where you need to go. But Israel said, thanks for the advice, but we would rather go do our own thing. And that was me. That was me growing up. And so the best thing for me was that I got humbled. And during my wilderness time, I feel like I was humbled a lot. And all the church rejections, all the working the jobs that I never said I'd work, I promise you, in high school, I said, I'm never going to work fast food, I'm never going to work in a cubicle, and I'm never going to work retail. And guess what I did in a row, right? To just check all of them off. But being stranded by myself in a lot of ways showed me that I probably need to take a step back and let God take control. Not only did God save me from myself in a lot of ways by changing my plans, but I also learned a lot of things that I wouldn't have learned in the classrooms at OC through these other jobs. And so taking me on a different path that I never would have thought of helped me in ways that I didn't see before. At Jersey Mike's, again, I was put in charge of ordering everything. And so that means I had to look ahead and make sure that we had enough food and drinks and paper products and all those things, but not too much, right? And so you have to plan just right. So when it goes into ministry, I had that, where I knew how to plan out things and be ready for things and have the right amounts and be prepared for the things that are coming up. At Feed the Children, I had to pick up the phone and actually call people when I didn't want to. And to me, that's, you know, the generation that we're in, right? That phone calls aren't a thing anymore. It's all text. But I had to practice picking up the phone and calling, because you got to do that in ministry. You have to be able to talk to people. I also learned how to handle difficult conversations, because sometimes I picked up the phone and called people and said, here's what we have available, and they were mad at me for some reason. And so I had to have difficult conversations with people. In Alaska, again, I learned a lot of things there. But I also learned how important studying the Bible for me was and working on myself. Not studying the Bible to do a lesson, not studying the Bible to do a sermon, but studying the Bible so I can work on my life. I learned how important that was in Alaska. I also learned how to be proud of being a Christian, being proud of Christ in the face of persecution. We lived in these little cabins when I was there, and there's two of us per cabin. And my roommate, when he would come in and see me reading the Bible, he'd say, oh, you're reading that stuff again? And I cleaned it up a whole lot for this audience because we were fishermen, okay? So he used quite different language when talking about that. But he was hostile towards religion. He was hostile towards Christians and Christ. So I learned how to handle that and learned how to talk to people who are hostile towards Christians. And the funny thing is, he would come in and say those things, and we'd have like a two-hour spiritual conversation. Like, oh, you don't know it, but you just did exactly what I wanted you to do. I learned how to do those things. At Office Depot, I learned how to deal with difficult customers sometimes. But more importantly, I learned what it looked like to share my faith in a work setting with coworkers. I learned how to share my faith by acting it out every day. And when they had questions, I was able to answer them and talk to them about why are you different? You know, why are you acting different to these people who are difficult? Well, I love Christ, and I want to show that love. And so we had those conversations. I had spiritual talks with my coworkers. I even had a few Bible studies with some of them. And so I learned how to deal with people in a work situation and how to share your faith and show your faith in that situation. So I feel like I can relate a lot with Israel, especially when God spoke to them through Jeremiah in the book of Jeremiah in chapter 29, verses 10 through 14. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. And I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. Again, I'm lucky that I didn't have to fall as far as Israel did, being exiled into Babylon, but to me, it felt like it sometimes. I was exiled to Jersey Mike's. I was exiled to feed the children. I was exiled to Alaska and those types of things. But I was a lot like Israel in thinking that I knew better than God and that I wanted to do things my way. Luckily, God had a plan for me, and I believe he still does. But it wasn't until I decided to seek him and let him know that he was in charge that God showed me the way that he wanted me to go. Now, it isn't easy allowing God to be in charge. As humans, we want to be in control. I mean, just look at the world around us. We try to control everything, don't we? We want to be the ones in control, and we especially want to be in control of our own lives, right? A lot of the times, we feel like that's the only thing that we can control is us. And so we want to be in control when it comes to that. And we love the saying, you know, pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps, because that means you're the one doing the pulling, and it's your life, and you're in charge. Nobody else gets a say in it. So it's really hard to allow God to come in and take control. And I still struggle at times to give God full control. But all the good things that have happened to me, when I look back, I realize, man, all the good things that have happened have become as a result of me getting out of the way and letting God work. And so now when I look back, it becomes easier and easier, because I can say, well, here's this example, here's this example, here's this example. If I want things to go well, I need to let God be in charge, because he's proved faithful throughout my life. And so now I can let him be in charge. And I know there's probably a lot of you guys out here that can say the exact same thing and echo that same sentiment of looking back, when God is in control, good things happen. When I'm in control, bad things happen, or I go nowhere, right? And so we have to find ways to allow God to be in control of our lives. Joshua chapter 1, verses 7 through 9 says, "Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law that my servant Moses gave to you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Those were the words of comfort that God gave to Joshua as he was about to do the most daunting task ever of leading Israel into the promised land. And it was going to be a very difficult thing. And God's like, yes, it's going to be difficult if you try to do it by yourself. But if you let me take control and you follow me in my ways, it won't be difficult. Now, I don't think that we will ever have to lead a nation into war. I hope not. I know I'm not qualified for that. But we are going to have some difficult times, and we're going to have some struggles. But when we allow God to take the lead, he's going to lead us to success. He's going to help us be successful. But the big question is, how do we do that? How do we allow God to take control? And how do we know what God is really saying to us? I think the first question, the answer comes from Matthew 6. And how do we do that? Matthew 6:33, Jesus says, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." Seek first God's kingdom and God's righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. And all the other things are the things that take our focus away from God. Kind of the things that, well, they're still on the whiteboard over there that we talked about this morning in class. The things that we put so much focus on and so much energy and so much time into, those are the things that God will take care of if we allow him to. But instead, we want to focus on those things, and we allow that to be our plan. Those are the things that we want to do. And we don't allow God to work in our life. When we focus on those things, and when we focus on God's kingdom and doing God's will, that allows God to come in and give us all the other things that we want. And God will take care of all the other aspects of our life if we are seeking him and his kingdom first, above everything else. And we need that to be our goal, seeking God's kingdom, not raises, not prestige, not money, not things. Our goal needs to be God's kingdom and furthering God's kingdom. I think that's how we let God take control, is we show him that we're not going to worry about these other things because you have it covered for us. Instead, I'm going to focus on you and your will. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make your path straight." A straight path is an easy path, and that's the one we want, right? We want the easy path. But Proverbs here says the only way for our path to be straight is to submit to God. We have to submit to God, and we have to trust in him with all of our heart and lean not on our own understanding. And when we do that, when we allow God to take control and when we trust him, he will make our path easy, and he will take us where we need to go. Then we have to know what God is saying to us, right? If we're going to let him take control, we also have to know what he's saying to us so we know that we're going in the right direction. To me, sometimes this is even more difficult than allowing God to take control, because we tend to want to put our own feelings and our own wants into what we think God is saying to us. We allow ourselves to muddy up the waters sometimes for the things that we want. But if we truly want to hear what God is saying to us and what his plan is for us, we have to listen. We have to hear God's words, and that means we need to be in God's word to be able to hear him. And we know when we study the Bible, we study God and we study his heart. And when we know God better, we can understand better what he wants for us. And then we know this is what God's will is. And we can discern for ourselves, is this what I want or is this what God wants? But unless we are in God's word, we're not going to know the difference in the two. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, 11 and 12 says, "For who knows a person's thoughts except their own spirit within them? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. What we have received is not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, so that we may understand what God has freely given us." God may not shout down from heaven in this big booming voice saying, "Jared, you need to go this way." You know, that's probably not going to happen. I'm not going to rule it out, but more than likely it's not going to happen. But he sent his spirit to dwell within us, to help us, to guide us, to be that helper, to understand who God is and what God's will is and purpose is for us. He gave that to everybody. He says, "This is the gift I'm giving to you." We need to use it. We need to use that gift. It's like if on Christmas Day you get this present, you've been waiting for it for so long, and you look at it and say, "Yes, I got it," but you never unwrap it. You just let it sit in the corner. What good is it? It's the same with the gift of the Holy Spirit that God has given us. We have to use it. We have to open that gift. And then we'll be able to hear what God is saying to us and speaking to us, and then we can listen. So I hope this morning that through some of my stories and through the verses that I've shared with you, that I've been able to encourage you a little bit. Maybe encourage you to take a look at yourselves and look at your life and see if you're allowing God to work in your life, or am I standing in the way of God? As individuals and as a church as well. As a church, are we allowing God to work through us, or are we looking at our own wants and our own desires? We need to pray, we need to study, and we need to know God so we can see his vision for us. And know that we are doing his will and not ours. And sometimes it's very difficult, but we have to let go and allow God to take over for us. So this morning, I think we have a song coming up for if there's anything that you have on your heart, if there's anything that this church can do to help you. If you're struggling, maybe it's a struggle with allowing God to take over for you, or you have that feeling of, "I'm not going anywhere. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm struggling. I need some help with this." We're going to have some people down front here. And if you feel that way, if there's any way that this church can be your family this morning, we're going to sing a song. And if you can come forward and we can pray with you and we can help you, and we can be your church family this morning. So please stand as we sing.